Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solotropia, Solotropia, Solotropia.
Bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost, and so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, indeed, we started to burn many things we found. That's the great Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns and the Rivertown Kids. The Solotropia song appears on the Tomorrow's Children album from Appleseed Records. Won a Grammy, by God. I am a I'm a Grammy-winning songwriter by default, thanks to Pete Seeger's willingness to do that song. We are here for another Solotropia Green Power and Wellness show. We're going to talk about nuclear power. Got two great experts with us for the first half hour, actually for the whole show. We're going to be joined at the half hour by yet another one. We have Ace Hoffman and Gene Stone from California. Hi, guys. Say hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Ace, you there, Gene?
Yep, I'm here.
Yes, indeed. Okay, but before we get to you, I want to commemorate the great Ernest Kallenbeck has passed away. Ernie was he didn't hate to be called Ernie, sorry. Chick Kallenbeck was a truly wonderful human being, a great writer. Published the books Ecotopia back in 1975. It was an inspiration to all of us who were in the hippie movement at the time, the anti-war, and the beginnings of the green movement. Ernest came up with the idea, beautiful idea actually, and I hope it happens, that Northern California and the states of Oregon and Washington seceded from the United States and formed an ecotopian society where everything was based on the natural ecology. It had a female leader, which was a revolutionary idea at the time, and lots of great free sex in the book. It was a terrific, still is, I have the most recent edition. And Ernest was a great visionary, way ahead of his time. And if you go back and read Ecotopia, as I did when I was writing Solartopia, really, a lot of the stuff that Ernest Kallenbeck predicted and hoped for back in 1975 did come true. And I had the great opportunity in 2010, I believe it was, with the Eon film crew to talk to Ernest about Ecotopia and the contrast with Solartopia, which I published in 2005. And it was a great experience, and we did film it. It's an hour-long discussion I had with Ernest Kallenbeck. It's the link to it is posted at nukefree.org, nukefree.org, and I was just sent it in the PRN. Maybe they'll post the link as well. It's a chance to see Ernest Kallenbeck on film. If you look at this video, he was 80. At the time, he looked about 50, and just in great shape. Unfortunately, he was stricken with cancer, and don't get me going on cancer. We've had a couple shows on cancer, and we will talk more about cancer in the future on the Green Power and Wellness show. But at any rate, I wanted to pay tribute to the great Ernest Kallenbeck, who passed away this past week. And if you want to see him, I've posted. He wrote a final piece called The Epistle to Ecotopians, which I have also posted at nukefree.org, N-U-K-E-F-R-E-E.org. And right there, also at nukefree.org, is the link to the Eon video that we did with Ernest. I believe it was in 2010. It's an hour-long discussion from Ecotopia to Solartopia. So if you get the time, go to nukefree.org. Hopefully we posted a PRN as well, and take a look, at least for a little while, this video discussion and read his epistle to the Ecotopians. He was a tremendous human being, Ernest Kallenbeck, and really greatly missed. Now, okay, well, thank you, Ernie, for all you did and everything you were. You're a tremendous guy. We are with Ace and Gene here. We're going to talk about nuclear power. I did post a piece last couple days. It's a blog at nukefree.org. The nuclear power industry has melted in Japan and France. Ace Hoffman talking to us from, where do you live in California, Ace?
I live about 15 miles south of the San Onofre nuclear waste generating station.
Right. So you're on your way to San Diego. How far are you from north of San Diego are you?
About 30 miles.
30 miles north of San Diego, 30 miles south of San, 15 miles south of San Onofre.
Yep.
So tell us about Japan, if you will, and then let's segue into San Onofre.
Well, Japan is, for the first time, nuclear-free since 1970, the first time since 1970, and the number of people protesting is growing exponentially. There's thousands, 5,000, 10,000 people. You keep hearing about the numbers, and they're just phenomenal. And there's also people doing starvation or fasting in Japan as well as in India.
So, right. Now, what led to this shutdown in Japan? Tell us the circumstances, if you will.
Well, it's hard to say because we're told so many things, but it appears that the earthquake and tsunami of March 11, 2011 was the precipitating event, if you will, but lack of proper engineering design of the reactors was certainly a factor. Lying to the public so that when things really started to go wrong, nobody was prepared for it. You name it, they did everything wrong, and they're suffering the consequences, and so will the rest of us if we don't start doing things right.
You got that right. Gene, you want anything to add about Japan before I jump in?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, there is an emergency going on there with several of the fuel pools, and especially in reactor number 4, and I'm wondering where the worldwide response is to deal with such an emergency that is could be dangerous and will be dangerous for all of us.
Well, let me jump in here since I was in Japan in the mid-70s. My piece at nukefree.org talks in some detail about what happened there. Japan has been at the heart of the nuclear power industry. Right from the get-go, really.
They built major parts.
Well, they still do, actually.
Yeah.
I think the world's only fabricator of reactor pressure vessels is in Osaka. Is that correct, Asa? Do you know about that? I think Japan is the only country that makes reactor pressure vessels at this point in time. But lots of heavy equipment, the steam generators that are causing so many amazing problems at San Onofre came from Mitsubishi in Japan. Is that correct?
Yes, and I don't know anyone else that's building reactor pressure vessels right now.
Right. So the deal is this. Japan bought into nuclear, you know, under American influence, of course, bought into nuclear power despite having been nuked at Hiroshima and Nagasaki on August 6th and 9th, 1945, the only countries to date so far to suffer from an overt act of war being a nuclear attack. But of course, the United States, we have had several hundred nuclear explosions self-inflicted on our own territory, as did the Soviet Union. But nonetheless, the French, of course, haven't exploded any nuclear weapons on France, but they have done plenty in the South Pacific. So the Japanese jumped into the nuclear industry, nuclear power industry, in the late 50s, early 60s. By the 1970s, they were banging out nuclear plants. Fukushima 1, a General Electric design, and all the reactors in Japan are designed essentially by General Electric and Westinghouse. I don't think there are any exceptions to that. Fukushima 1 is a General Electric design. Not only was there the beginning of a nuclear industry in Japan, but there was the beginning of an anti-nuclear movement right from the start. The so-called nuclear allergy, where, of course, having suffered from nuclear attacks, the Japanese were all too familiar with the side effects of nuclear power and weapons. And I actually spoke in Japan in late 1975, early 1976, spoke to a large number of audiences. My speeches were translated into Japanese, so I actually don't really have any idea what they thought I was saying. But the response was good, and I actually wrote a piece from Japan in 1976 that talked about Fukushima. Everybody there knew that every reactor in Japan is on or near an earthquake fault and subject to tidal waves. They don't have nuclear plants on inland rivers in Japan. They're all on the ocean. And the idea of what finally did happen at Fukushima in 2011, having a combination earthquake and tsunami, was discussed in Japan 35 years ago, 40 years ago, actually. Everybody knew this could happen. And so ACE, as you point out, you know, they didn't warn the public. Well, you know, they poo-pooed a very specific objections to nuclear plants, including Fukushima, and just the company, TEPCO and Tokyo Electric Power Company, and the other companies that built nuclear plants, and the Japanese government, dismissed these objections from the public and said, no, this can't happen. If it can, if it does happen, we'll be prepared. And, of course, as you point out, Ace, they were not prepared. And now, the anti-nuclear movement in Japan has been reasonably powerful, but it's an authoritarian country with a very traditional, very conservative. And so people who did object were marginalized, like they were here for so many years, and not paid attention to. And then, but now that this catastrophe has happened, and let's talk a little bit about the ongoing disaster. I know you know quite a bit about it, Ace. The people of Japan are furious. And along the way, they did get the right, which we do not have in the United States, of vetoing nuclear reactors. I hate to call them plants, by the way. I don't call nuclear reactors plants, because plants are plants. And that's one thing a nuclear reactor definitely is not, is a plant. So one thing that happened along the way is that local governments and local citizenries in Japan got the power to stop reactors from coming back online once they were taken down for repair and for maintenance and refueling. And so one by one, since March 11th, 2011, every reactor remaining in Japan has gone down for repair or refueling, and local populations have refused to allow any of them back online. And the last one of them shut Saturday in Japan. And so as of March 10th, 2011, there were 54 reactors in Japan that were licensed to operate. And today, you know, what is it, 13, 14 months later, not a single one of them is operating. It's astounding, don't you think? Ace, what do you think?
I think we should join them.
So how do we do that now? You and Gene, you're in California, yeah?
I am.
Where are you?
San Clemente.
You're in San Clemente. So are you and the ghost of Richard Nixon? I get to dance to the music of John Adams and Nixon in China, right? I mean, are you near where Nixon lived?
Not that far, about a mile. But 3 miles north of San Onofre Nuclear Generating Waste Station. So, we're pretty close.
Well, you know, as long as Nixon was alive, allegedly he was alive, the only thing I liked about San Onofre was that if it went, it would have taken Nixon with it. But other than that, I hate the thing. And in fact, I was just on the train from L.A. to San Diego and back, and of course the train goes right past the damn thing. So tell us, Ace and Gene, the implications for Fukushima. Here we have a world leader. This is not the Soviet Union we're talking about, because when Chernobyl blew up, and of course all those years the industry told us that the nuclear power reactors could not blow up, and now we've had four of them which have blown up, one at Chernobyl and three at Fukushima. So, and the three at Fukushima, of course, are American design. So tell us, guys, what is the implication? What's happening at San Onofre in some detail on the rebound from what's been happening at Fukushima?
I'd like to say one thing about Japan first before we get into that. On 3/11/12, the first year anniversary, we had a protest here at San Onofre, a half a mile from the nuclear site, and we had two people from Japan, and the most pressing thing that they had to say is that the woman that was here, she said that we trusted our company, TEPCO, and we trusted our government because they told us that nothing could go wrong and that there would never be a problem. And then she said, now we know we were lied to and that accidents can happen. And I came to San Onofre, to San Clemente, to tell you that it can, accidents can happen, and that we are now praying for you and the rest of the world where there are nuclear power plants to be aware that there can be an accident, and they are suffering that.
Ace, were you at that rally?
Yes, I was, and it was astounding to see so many people. You know, we had hundreds of people there who truly understood the dangers that we're facing, and realizing that for every one of them, there's 100,000 people in San Diego alone who haven't got a clue.
It's amazing, isn't it? What would happen to San Diego if San Onofre, God forbid, blew?
Well, we'd lose, I mean, this is a vibrant community, and everybody that comes here loves it and wants to stay. But we'd lose it all. We'd lose hundreds of billions of dollars worth of property and livelihoods. And this is where innovation happens and things spread out from California across the world. And all that would be lost.
Yeah, I just want to point out, you mentioned the property loss. At 26 years now, 27 years, April 26th, after the catastrophe at Chernobyl, the governments of Belarus and Ukraine estimate a minimum cost to each of them separately of $250 billion. So the cost of minimally of Chernobyl has been $500 billion. And there is just no way that Fukushima is going to cost less. I mean, you've got four destroyed reactors. You have a highly populated, highly advanced society that's been inundated with radiation. We've only begun to see the evacuations, and you know they've already put in billions of dollars. I imagine that by the time we're done, which is never, of course, Fukushima will end up costing the Japanese public trillions of dollars.
Absolutely.
And God forbid such a thing should happen at San Onofre. Can you tell us about the vulnerabilities, the special vulnerabilities of San Onofre, as they might relate to Fukushima? Are earthquakes possible? Are tsunamis possible?
It sits on top of earthquake faults.
Say that again?
It sits on top of earthquake faults. I mean, there's no question that San Onofre is within, you know, a quarter mile, maybe a mile from the nearest known fault, and probably even closer to ones we don't know. Earthquake faults riddle this area. There's offshore, there's underwater canyons that could collapse, just like happened in Banda Aceh in 2004, causing an enormous tsunami.
Yeah, 250,000 people died there.
Yeah.
We could have that was in Indonesia at the because of the tidal wave.
Yes, and that was without a meltdown.
Right.
It almost caused a meltdown in India, you know, 500, 800 miles away.
How did that happen? Tell me about that. I didn't know that part.
The wave from the tsunami made it all the way to some reactors in India and did a significant amount of damage. I think they were shut for a couple of months.
Wow. I didn't even know that. And, of course, you mentioned, let's not lose track, you mentioned that hunger strike in India at the Kudan Kalam, I think I got that right, reactor, which is under construction in southern India. We now have at least 500 women, just women, hunger fasting to stop this thing from being built.
That's in addition to more than a dozen people who have said they're going to fast to the death. And people are becoming this concerned because the dangers are becoming this obvious. They're not wrong to be incredibly concerned about what's happening and about the dangers of starting a new reactor. Three Mile Island was a new reactor.
Yes, Three Mile Island melted on March 28th, Unit 2 melted on March 28th, 1979. It had officially opened December 28th, 1978. So it was exactly 3 months old. Thank goodness, by the way, that Three Mile Island was new, because the burden of radioactive waste and radioactive materials in the core was much less than it would have been had it been an older reactor, like Fukushima 1, for example, which had been operating since 1970.
And
so you're telling us Gene and Ace, that San Onofre, the nuclear plant between San Diego and Los Angeles, which is thankfully shut right now, and we can talk about that in a minute, sits virtually directly on earthquake faults. Are you telling us that our nuclear power industry would build nuclear power reactors on earthquake faults?
Well, it was, yes, it was a California reactors that brought that caused the phrase that the best way to find an earthquake fault is to build a nuclear reactor.
Are they like divining rods?
Yeah.
Well, one thing to remember, of course, is that the earthquake that hit Fukushima, and now we're finding out the earthquake at very least was leading us towards a meltdown. You know, all of this talk about the tsunami coming in and wiping out backup generators and blah, 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 which is, true, but it appears now that the earthquake itself was sufficient to cause the meltdown. Have you looked into that?
I tend to agree with that statement. It's so hard to get accurate information. But
I've heard the same thing. But not only are we on earthquake faults here, we're in a tsunami zone as well here at San Onofre. So and to top that off, we have the worst safety record of any nuclear power plants for 10 years in a row.
And we have lousy parts in our reactor that are falling apart.
That are less than 18 months old.
Astounding distinctions here. You're saying among the 104 reactors licensed to operate in the United States, San Onofre is in last place in terms of safety?
Way last.
Yes, by a large margin.
So they're like the Chicago Cubs of the nuclear industry. Sorry. Okay, well, so I have been to San Onofre, and I have seen it up close and personal. And I have to say, it is not near the ocean. It's on the ocean. And if there was an earthquake at, God forbid, at San Onofre, am I wrong to say that that thing would just fall right onto the beach and be washed up by incoming waves?
Well, they had to build it as low as possible to save energy because they use a billion gallons a minute or a billion gallons a day, a million gallons a minute of water that they're drawing in from the ocean. So if they wanted to do that efficiently, they had to build it low down to the ocean. So they did. And a lot of it lays below sea level and behind a seawall that's only 14 feet above high tide.
And how high was the tsunami at Fukushima?
Well, 60, 70 feet, something like that.
Yeah, I think it was 42 feet.
Well, they had a tsunami wall at Fukushima, which did nothing. I mean, they built, I think it was 40 feet high, 30 feet high, the wall at Fukushima, which they told the public would protect it from a tsunami, which is, after all, a Japanese word. Now, is there a history of tsunamis on the California coast?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, we have evidence that geologists have found of sea rocks hundreds of feet up on the mountains behind San Onofre, which is a definite indication not of an uplifting of the mountains because of the way the rocks are laid about, but an indication of a large wave coming and pushing the pebbles up the beach. So, and these would be caused by an underwater canyon collapse offshore, perhaps dozens or maybe even hundreds of miles away. But it wouldn't be real far away. It wouldn't be like across the ocean that would do that. But it could be a long ways away.
And that tsunami that Ace is talking about is estimated to have been 300 feet high.
300 feet high? A tsunami?
That right here, yeah. At least one.
Okay, so tell us what a 300-foot-high tsunami would do to San Onofre.
Well, many years ago, back in 2004, when there was the tsunami, the Indonesian Banda Aceh tsunami, I asked the spokesperson what it would do to the dry cask, let alone the reactor and the spent fuel pools. And he said, oh, they're protected to 50 feet underwater. Well, 50 feet's not going to be good enough, especially if some boat comes crashing in along with the waves. And we saw the boats get pushed miles and miles inland. A huge boat. I mean, you never mind the tsunami seawall. The seawall can be smashed to bits by a boat.
Actually, as I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, the tsunami that hit Fukushima did come part of it did come to the United States, and as I recall, five people in California were actually killed by that tsunami, including one guy up north who was standing on a pier photographing the tsunami and got washed away. Do you recall that? You don't. Well, I do. Anyway. All right. We are talking with Ace Hoffman and Gene Stone in from California about the San Onofre nuclear plant, nuclear reactors, two reactors there that are shut. Actually, there are three that have shut there. The other one's been shut for a long time. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, we'll talk about this after the break. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the chair of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Gregory Jasko, has just issued what you might say is a bit of a rebuke to the owners of the nuclear reactors at San Onofre, saying basically that you guys have been talking about reopening this place as early as June, but you haven't even filed paperwork, and we have no date that we're going to allow this thing to open. Is that kind of a correct interpretation of what?
He called such talk, quote, premature, and we refer to it as a slap in the face to San Onofre's owners.
Ace and I and several other people had a meeting with him on April the 6th, where he not only promised us that they would get to the root cause and find out what the problems are, and that safety would be the first concern for the NRC before opening the plant, but he personally guaranteed us that there would be a public meeting prior to any opening of that plant.
Well, do you take him his word? Do you think he'll do that?
I do.
So you think there will be? Are you counting on a public meeting to before the NRC issues a relicensing to a green slip, let's put it that way, to let them reopen the San Onofre?
We are definitely counting on that to happen.
Okay.
And we will be holding him to his word. As a matter of fact, just today, Rose and other groups here in our area initiated contact with all of the members of the NRC commission to remind them of what was said and their job, which is to watch out for the safety of the citizens around all of these nuclear power plants.
Well, Gene, you're right on top of the thing. What do you think?
Well, I have been for shutdown since the 1970s. I was never in agreement with opening these things. For me, the whole issue is all of these technical things and the threats of problems, those are horrendous. But what is more horrendous for my relatives, the Native Americans, is that we leave such a disaster for the seven generations to come. It's unconscionable to produce so much waste that we don't know how to deal with and has to be watched over for 300,000 years. There's no society that is over 12,000 to 20,000 years old, no matter how you measure time at this point. So how are we going to guarantee that anything can be taken care of and watched over for 300,000 years? It's just unconscionable to produce this kind of toxicity for our relations.
Well, you're 100% right as far as I'm concerned. We're talking about the San Onofre nuclear reactors and nuclear reactors in general. San Onofre is of particular importance because it's shut right now due to steam generator problems, and we are hopefully following in the footsteps of Japan, which has shut now officially as of Saturday every single one of its 54 nuclear plants. That's a gargantuan milestone, really, in the history of nuclear power. We're going to return with Ace Hoffman and Gene Stone after the break here to talk more about shutting America's nuclear reactors and getting to Solartopia. Utopia, home sweet home for me. That's the great Dana Lyons of Cows with Guns fame, cowswithguns.org, singing the Solartopia song, the Rocky Top version. We're back for the second half hour of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We've been talking to Ace Hoffman and Gene Stone from California. about Fukushima, the shutdown of all Japanese reactors as of Saturday, a gargantuan milestone in the march to Solartopia, and the history, the sad and troubled and way too long history of nuclear power reactors. And we're joined now by Ralph Fusarola. Is that it, Ralph? Did I get that right?
That's close enough. Fusatola, Chetola, whatever you want to call it.
All right, we like that.
Really
how about we call you Ralph?
I'm with you.
It's great to have you with us. And, Ralph, you come to us through Val here at the Gary Null Network here, the Progressive Radio Network, and you want to talk to us a bit about Geiger counters and monitoring radioactive fallout.
Right.
As we know, unfortunately, Ace and Gene, radiation from Fukushima did come to California within a week, and despite the denials of our own federal government, definitely had a health impact. What do you think about that, and what's your deal with Geiger counters?
Now let's start with a little background first. I'm one of the trustees of Natural Solutions Foundation. My two co-trustees are Dr. Rima E. Labo, M.D., a physician who practiced medicine for 40 years without ever writing out a prescription for a pharmaceutical drug, and Major General Bert Stubblebine, retired U.S. Army general, wonderful, extraordinary individual, great patriot. The three of us, as trustees of Natural Solutions, are looking exactly for that. We're looking for natural solutions to pressing social problems. And there is no more pressing social problem than what is emanating from Fukushima. General Byrd identified what he calls the four technologies, the genomicidal technologies, that are weaponizing the world against human survival. And those technologies are, of course, nuclear power, vaccine and drug toxins, environmental toxins, and GMO fake food. Those four technologies Dr. Rima identified as harming the human body the same way, whether it's ionizing radiation striking you, or whether it's the toxins in the environment and the drugs and the vaccine, or whether it's the novel protein in the fake food. All of these things cause the same body damage. It causes what are called free radical cascades, the bad type of free radicals, not the good type. In this case, the chemical free radicals that cause damage to cell membranes and even can damage the DNA at the center of your cells. And so those technologies cause the same damage. And by the way, they have a same solution, if you will, for the past half a century. Our natural products companies have been developing one thing supremely, what are called antioxidant nutrition. All those wonderful things like vitamin E and vitamin C and all those things your body needs. Well, it turns out they're the very things that can help you protect yourself from the damage as much as you can. And remember, the worse the radiation is, the harder it is to protect yourself from it. And your body can actually rebuild itself to some small degree, depending on how badly you're exposed and how long. And so we consider food and supplementation to be real key issues in dealing with Fukushima. We agree with the physicist Michio Kaku said on 60 Minutes a couple of days ago. The Northern Hemisphere is literally hanging on by its fingernails. And if those buildings in Fukushima Daiichi shake again, and if those spent fuel pools topple over, we have literally a hemisphere-destroying event going on.
Let's talk about that a bit, Ralph. Thank you for that. And as someone who just did a 16-day water fast, I'm well aware of the at the North True North Health Center in Santa Rosa. I'm well aware of the possible benefits of not only the supplements but also our potassium iodide, which can protect the thyroid to a certain extent. But what we want to do now, of course, is prevent the need for that. We've already had our President of the United States get on national television and falsely tell us that the radiation from Fukushima wasn't going to come here and wasn't going to harm anybody. But you mentioned, Ralph, spent fuel pools in the air. Ace, you've got a background in nuclear issues here. Can you tell us about what this situation is a lot about it. Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat from Oregon,
right,
issued a
devastating
press statement about it. Tell us about this perched.
Well, you know, the same thing with General Burt. Burt Stubblebine was the head of U.S. Army Strategic Intelligence back in the mid-1980s. He's been retired for 20-something years. And one of the things he does as president of our foundation is he looks at situations and gives really good strategic advice. And so he prepared, what is a 27-minute estimate of situation, the video. It's available on our website, which is, by the way, www.healthfreedomusa.org. HealthFreedomUSA.org, or you can get to it by going to GlobalHealthFreedom.org as well, same page, and you'll see the link to his 27-minute, it's currently a private video, we have not made it a public video on YouTube, where we've only basically put it on the website and sent it out to our email list, but he definitely does the same devastating description. He talks about literally the number of spent fuel rods, where they're physically located, and what the real problem is. And of course, in short, you know, we have the six reactors that were built right up against the coast in an area known for its earthquakes and tsunamis. General Electric, when they designed these reactors, put the control rooms on the first floor within tsunami distance, if you will, and they put these pools, these spent fuel rod pools, literally three stories in the air, and that was done for a good engineering reason. And, you know, you're removing the rods from the reactor and you put them in the storage pool. And then you take the new rods and you take them from the storage pool and put them in the reactor. And then in theory, the spent fuel rods are taken out of there and put somewhere else. Well, that never happened. These tanks up in the air became the permanent, if you will, storage for the spent fuel rods. And as a result of that, we have 1,500 or 1,300 rods in Building 4, similar number in Building 2. There are a couple of ponds that have even more spent fuel rods on that property. And, of course, building number 4, for example, it was struck by an earthquake, it was struck by a tsunami, and then it blew up. And it is, what's left is a skeleton of a building with an exposed radioactive core and with radioactive spent fuel rods up in the air in a concrete, reinforced concrete structure that is listing. And depending on who you listen to, we'll come down with the next 5.0 or 6.2 earthquake. General Burt believes it'll be about a 6.2 that'll bring it down. Mike Adams of Natural News believes that anything above a 5.0 will bring it down. And what happens when it comes down? Well, all the water that's currently in these pools, of course, escapes, and the zirconium-clad radioactive rods become exposed to the air and blow up. They explode, scattering nuclear debris all over the place. Depending on the amount and how it explodes, we could face an explosion that is not just a chemical explosion, but one that has nuclear aspects as well. In any event, it'll scatter, according to General Burt's estimate, 85 times the cesium that Chernobyl scattered.
And so right, and we've seen estimates like that also from Robert Alvarez at the Institute for Policy Studies. I published... Ralph, if you'll send me the link on that video, I will put it up at nukefree.org.
Ask people to go to help.
I'll get it. You send me the link, and I'll put it up at nukefree.org. Ace Hoffman, what is your take on the perched spent fuel pool at the Fukushima 4 reactor there? What have you read about it?
All of this that he's described sounds approximately accurate to me, and I just would want to add that every reactor has spent fuel pools that are just as dangerous.
Right.
And Harvey, I'd like to let you know.
This is Gene Stone, yeah?
ROSE and our local coalition of groups here in...
What does ROSE stand for, by the way?
Residents Organized for a Safe Environment.
All right, we like that one. That's good.
We are organizing the Volunteers of America... monitoring system, or pardon me, network. So we are using a Geiger counter made by Medcom, which is the same one that is being used in Japan by Safecast, and we are setting up a monitoring volunteer monitors all around the state. We are also using the IRAD for your iPhone monitor as well. And I have both, and they both seem to be reading about the same almost all the time, so they're both very accurate. So we will be having on our websites on Decommission San Onofre and Residents Organized for a Safe Environment, we will be having these monitors being read live. So that
in real time.
In real time.
Right. Now, I have to say that I think, you know, the federal government of the United States, this is something that we should expect from our government. There should be real-time monitoring of radioactive fallout
but
in every city,
no
every county.
Monitors. The reason we started
is
because we checked into that.
Right.
50% of the monitors will be turned on after an accident. The other 50%, you can look at, the information is at least 1 year old.
What information is that? What's 1 year old?
If you go to any of the information on the RadNet system and various other
systems.
The government system.
Right.
The information is from 3 months to a year old. So the only real-time monitoring that is going on by us right now. And there's just a few of us. We only have like 14 people signed up so far. We just started this less than a few weeks ago. And we're setting up the technical part to get it on live on the website, and we have it already up on one Decommission San Onofre. So we are moving, and we are saying that not only for the radiation that's coming from Japan, but for the potential accident anywhere here in America, but particularly here in San Onofre, that we need to have our own monitoring system set up, and if the government won't do it for us, we'll do it ourselves.
Ace, have you followed any of the fallout data from Fukushima in California?
They had off the shores of California 500 times the normal levels of, I think it was cesium in the kelp. There's been increased levels of radiation in milk and in vegetables and on and on and on.
And this is from Fukushima. How do we know it's from Fukushima?
There are ways of actually looking at the isotopes involved.
Uh-huh.
Specific isotopes are proving that. There were some isotopes found in Finland that could only have come from the Fukushima reactor.
Where?
You know, people around the world are reacting the same way.
Finland.
We're setting up other networks just like the one the gentleman is talking about. For example, what we've just done is we've begun to create something called the Women's Health Freedom Coalition. And we were just, with my two co-trustees, on a four-city tour. We went to San Francisco, to Houston, to Dallas, and to Los Angeles, meeting people. And as a result of that, there are chapters being set up of the Women's Health Freedom Coalition, which will basically be doing one first action. They will be raising some funds to buy decent Geiger counters, and they're going to begin to do exactly what the other speakers have been talking about, setting up local networks of people to begin to test, record, and publicize the readings, because, of course, the authorities are doing their best to pretend it's not happening. And it's real important for citizens to begin to take this into their own hands and provide this information. If you go on the Internet, for example, and look at Fukushima, you'll find there are groups of people in the Fukushima area who take their Geiger counters. They go to a playground, and you'll see a photo of kids in the playground and the Geiger counter, and you'll see the reading. And they post that, and they do it day after day after day. And this is beginning to have an impact. 70 NGOs, non-governmental organizations in Japan, just a few days ago, issued a statement, an open letter to the Prime Minister and to the Secretary General of the United Nations, calling for real action to stop the disaster, to reinforce the buildings, and to cap them. So the public...
Well, you know, they're still capping. It's 26 years now. They're still trying to cap Chernobyl. What's the status of putting the cap on Chernobyl after all these years?
Oh, gee, I'm not sure. The last I heard, they were still getting funding for it.
Yeah, no,
there was a...
Exactly.
Exactly.
For 5 years, that country has been telling the European Union that they need to cover... make a new sarcophagus over Chernobyl, and they have not come up with the funding for that. They estimate that to cost another 1 billion euros to cover that. And finally, the European Union...
A billion euros would be about 2.5 billion American dollars, yeah.
Right. And the European Union just recently, about a month ago, agreed that they're going to start the funding of that project but God knows when that's going to actually start.
Amazing stuff. We're talking with Ace, Gene, and Ralph, all experts on nuclear power and the Fukushima fallout, talking a lot about the San Onofre nuclear reactors, which are thankfully shut at the moment and which we are working really, really hard to keep shut, which are between L.A. and San Diego. There are faulty steam generators there. The company San Diego Gas and Electric and Southern California Edison, the partners there, have said they want to reopen in June, but the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the chair of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Gregory Jasko, has just pretty much said, hey, not so fast, we're going to have basic paperwork for you people. What is the core problem there, Ace, at San Onofre, that caused this shutdown, and what's it going to take them to reopen the damn thing?
I think the core problem was greed on the part of the owners.
Is greed against Nuclear Regulatory Commission regulations?
Absolutely not, but sometimes it can cause a cascading number of additional problems. And in this case, what it caused was when they replaced the steam generators that had worn out too quickly, they were so interested in not having them wear out so quickly next time that they put in a whole lot of extra tubes. There's thousands of tubes inside of a steam generator, and as they wear out, they plug them up. And when they plug too many of them up, they have to replace the steam generator, which is a very expensive process.
How much? How much is a steam generator these days?
A couple hundred million.
I may want to put
dollars.
One in my house. What's that?
$671 million.
For a full steam generator?
Right.
That's a set of four for
right.
$670
million. Oh. Well, how many do they have at San Onofre?
They have four.
They have four, so the $170 million each.
The $670 million. I couldn't hear Gene's number, but the total price for all four of them was about $670 million.
Well, that's with a slight discount if it was four times 170, 680. So I guess they cut a deal somewhere. And what happened? They put in new steam generator, and what'd they do, and why isn't it working?
Well, they put in a lot of extra tubes, and in order to fit the extra tubes, they had to take out some support structures. And evidently, this let a lot more water through the system, or a lot more steam. We're not sure which, but something caused it to vibrate a lot more than it's supposed to. And things started banging into each other, and it sprung a leak, and they shut it down.
Now, so this is a nuclear power reactor we're talking about here in the year 2012. We're not talking about a Ford Flipper in 1918, which this description sounds like here.
Well, yeah. What's worse is that their proposal for turning it back on, their solution is that they're going to turn it on, turn it up till it vibrates, and then back it off and run it at whatever level that is, 50-70%.
You're joking, right?
No. this is the science that they're using. They're going to turn it on till it vibrates, and then back it off and then let it run when they slow it down enough that it doesn't vibrate anymore. That's
nice. I like that. That's kind of, you know, it's American know-how here. We're talking with Ace, Gene, and Ralph about nuclear power and San Onofre and Fukushima. We have just been told by Ace Hoffman, a really great expert on nuclear power. Let me repeat this to make sure I understand what they're going to do. This is a multi-billion-dollar nuclear power plant with the capability of irradiating all of California. And what they're going to do, they installed the steam generators at $170 million a crack, four of them, and but they didn't work. And so what they're going to do now is on this nuclear plant, which sits on an earthquake fault or many earthquake faults, right on the coast of California, and I mean right on the coast of California, is, you know, 100 yards from the low tide line, if it's that much, at San Onofre. Three reactors. One's been shut a long time, and two are just now shut. So they put in, according to Ace Hoffman, a new steam generators, and they haven't been working right. So what they're going to do is they're going to fix them, and then they're going to run the plant until the steam generators vibrate. And then they're going to cut power back, and that's how they'll know that they are operating properly. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's what they intend to do. And they're going to start at 50% power because I presume that they're starting at 50% because that's where they can be sure they'll make money.
Well,
they wouldn't put
money out.
They wouldn't put profits out of the public
science.
Safety. Are you inferring that a public utility in the United States would put their profit ahead of the public safety?
I'm not sure they consider public safety at all, but other than that, yeah.
Okay.
Under the way our law is written, actually, the governments guarantee the public utilities profit on their investments.
Yes, I mean,
that's
15%,
the way the system operates, you know?
Yeah, and not only do they guarantee them profit, but they shield them from liability in case of a major catastrophe. Well, let's ask Ace and G. Ralph, are you in California? Where are you?
No, I'm in the East Coast. Actually, I was in California last week. We, as I said, we went on a tour to try to help people organize Women's Health Freedom Coalition chapters to do precisely this, to begin to measure the radiation.
I think you got some chapters.
The EPA raised the so-called acceptable level of radiation by 100 times and by 1,000 times in order to stop.
Right, right. Well, that's how we deal with safety issues. If the biological entity that's allegedly being protected can't withstand the impacts of radiation, a certain degree of radiation, then just say that they can get more, and that will allow it to happen. So
same thing with drugs, you know. With drugs, the fourth stage of testing, and my field of expertise is really that area. I practiced law for 30
We're talking about radiation.
Put it out in the public, and then they find out how many people die, and if not too many die, then it stays out, but half.
Right, well, of course, then that's what we call Robert Alvarez, who I worked with for a long time on these issues, says basically it's the bodies in a pile syndrome. When you finally have bodies in a pile, maybe they'll acknowledge a health risk. Ace and Gene out there in California, is there a substantial resistance to reopening San Onofre?
Yes, there is. And Harvey, I would like to invite you. We're having our fourth nuclear summit post Fukushima on May the 27th, right here in San Clemente. We formed a group called Nuclear Free California Network. And I know that I saw you in the hallway at the library at the first summit that we had. So please stop in again if you're in the area and come to this next summit.
And where will the summit be?
The summit is going to be in San Clemente at 10 o'clock in the morning till 4 at Irons in the Fire Restaurant.
Oh, cool. Now, is Richard Nixon buried in San Clemente, or?
No, we put him out under the nuclear power plant.
Well, one thing I like about San Onofre is it's one of the few reactors in the world where the initial opposition came from surfers. There was a major, San Onofre, I guess, is still a great surfing area, if you don't mind getting radiated. And I guess since the plant is shut, it's a lot safer. The reactors are, all three reactors are shut. What do you guys put the odds at in terms of keeping San Onofre shut? And what needs to be done to prevent these two reactors from going back online?
I don't know what the odds are, but we need a public outcry. We need people to be sending letters to the California Public Utilities Commission, the California Energy Commission, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and to our senators and congressmen and so on and so forth.
Well, now, I want to put this in, and Ralph, jump in on reactor issues. Nationwide, in the United States, we have quite a few reactors shut. One of them, of course, is Crystal River in Florida, which Progress Energy has spent more than $1 billion trying to expand and fix, and it's a total disaster. We think Crystal River will never reopen. We are hoping that San Onofre never reopens. We have a huge grassroots movement in Vermont to shut Vermont Yankee. Indian Point is under great attack. Davis Bessie, which is a total nightmare outside of Toledo in Ohio, is also very much on the brink, as I understand, two reactors in Texas. So all across. And of course, we had two in Nebraska that were just seriously threatened. Actually, one was inundated by flooding over the summer. Ralph, is there a favorite nuclear plant in your area? Very quickly,
well,
that we want
to
shut.
As we said for many decades, here in New Jersey, we are downwind from Three Mile Island, the very first of the great disasters.
Yeah.
We know about it. Let me tell you. But, you
okay.
Know,
well, listen, Ralph. Thank you so much for joining us. Ralph, thanks for joining us. Ace Hoffman, Gene Stone in California. We're sorry we can't continue. Come see us at nukefree.org. We have a new video from Ernest Kallenbach, who just passed away. Next week we'll be back again on the health case. Let's keep San Onofre and Indian Point and Three Mile Island and all the nuclear plants shut and join Japan in going at long last nuclear free, which just pray we don't have to have a Fukushima here to make that happen. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much, Kev, on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show.
Solartopia, don't you know we're gonna have a solar.